And we are back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU FM, broadcasting on the community at 93.3 here on the FM dial, and to the rest of the world at cfmu.mcmaster.ca. And as promised before the break, we have some special news today, an update on the massive student protests in Quebec. And we have with us Sunchi Avlijas, a graduate student at McGill University. She has been taking part in the organizing of these major actions. Sunchi, thanks very much for being on the program with us today.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
Well, it's a bit of a familiar voice for some of us. Before leaving for graduate school, since she co-hosted one of our episodes. So it's good to have you back here on the program. And you're always involved in activism, getting involved. You were pretty quick to get involved over in Quebec. So I know this latest action is something that we're hearing about in some detail, in some depth, even here in Ontario. It was huge, this anti-tuition
right.
strike.
It's a little bit different than in Ontario.
Yes, no, I mean, we've been part of some respectable rallies in Toronto, yeah. for example, but nothing like this. I heard there was like at least 120,000 people there. How many people yeah. came out?
Well, some of the estimates that I heard were 200,000 and or more, basically just saying that it's the largest student protest in North America ever, and it's certainly unprecedented for Quebec.
It lived up to all the hype. This was bigger than that pre-referendum rally they had.
There was only 30,000, you know.
No, it must have been a big deal to put together. There's people from, I guess, multiple universities involved in this one.
Yes, so basically every single university in Quebec was involved. And in fact, McGill, where I'm studying, is usually one of the last ones to be involved. And this time we had a really large turnout. One of the reasons why this the turnout was so large is that 300,000 students were on strike for that day. So some were on unlimited strike, which means that they've been on strike for, you know, almost 2 months already. Other ones just did a limited strike over that day or a couple of days in order to join in the really large demonstration.
Well, I had heard that this march extended more than 50 city blocks.
Yeah, that's right. So I was actually at the back of the demonstration, and we were just waiting around. Well, not at the very back, but towards the back. And we were still at the park. Plus the Canada, and then I got news that the front of the march was already at Saint Laurent, which is quite a ways away. it was really something.
Yes, it was actually taking place in wholly different neighborhoods. Like the march extended.
Yeah.
That must have been hard to coordinate. I don't even know how you do that.
Yeah, there has been a lot of preparation for the march, and a lot of different student organizations have been at the provincial level have been involved. And they have been involved in coordinating the actual march and making sure people knew where they were going. But the students were just really excited. Everybody was really happy. There was music. People were all dressed in red. And that's the color that's become symbolic for the opposition of the tuition hikes.
Yes, I believe there was a red square that had been developed as a logo or symbol by the students.
Yeah, so that actually dates back to, you know, sort of the history of the Quebec student movement, the anti-tuition hike movement. It's a red square. And it basically stands for we're square in the red. We're squarely in the red because students are in debt. And so everybody for about a year now has started wearing these little red felt squares under bags, under coats.
Yeah, no, there's some people at York in solidarity. I've seen that really, here in Toronto.
Well, in Montreal, it's really something. You walk down the street and, you know, every other person has a red square. So there's a lot of support, and it's been really nice to see.
Well, you practically made a red square, or at least a rectangle or a snake or a trapezoid of some kind. I mean, if you see the YouTube videos, if you look up Montreal student protest, Quebec student protests, or tuition strike, there's some very largely viewed videos that show just snapshots of that, and it was so huge no one could really measure or fully photograph it. People were looking outside their dorm or their office buildings, just seeing. I mean, I remember when 700 people marched in Hamilton, and it took up a good chunk of the downtown. I think you were there too, you saw that. But when 200,000 people march, you're talking about something the size of one of the satellite cities around Hamilton, taking all the people.
They said it was about 2 kilometers, extending 2 kilometers, so it was quite something.
Now we know what it looks like. It wasn't just the university students involved, of course. I've read as well that parents were involved, parents of high school students, because I guess those high school students are future university and college students, and the parents seem to think they have an interest in keeping the tuition fees down as well.
Right. So, yeah, in Quebec, this is really much more than just a student movement. It's a social movement. So the parents are definitely behind, you know, they're aware of how much the government of Quebec expects them to contribute to the education. And unions are involved as well. The two biggest Quebec unions have endorsed the student strike and the student fight against tuitions. So it's and they've encouraged their members to come out to the demonstration as well. So it wasn't just students out there.
It's clear that this is part of a sustained organizing effort by students. You had mentioned the earlier demonstrations from which the red logo had derived. There had been years. I mean, this is years and years.
Yeah, that happened in 2005,
And it's been pointed out before that McGill is one of the more conservative universities. You say it's the last to get involved in things like this.
Yeah.
But all students have been networking with students across all universities, so it's not seen as a university issue of a particular university or a particular city, even. It's province-wide. You know, so there's a few issues that come out of that. One of them, in terms of the sustained organizing, I know that there's now calls for future actions. There's talk about economic disruption.
Yeah, in fact, that's been happening this week. So, you know, the students knew from the beginning that basically having a parade in downtown Montreal wasn't going to change the government's mind. You know, it does a lot to show how much public support this movement has and how much students are committed to the cause. But the government has been really not very responsive. They're not answering, you know, student unions' phone calls and they weren't really willing to negotiate. So before the demonstration even happened, some of the student unions had already planned this week of economic disruptions that we're in the middle of right now. So across, and this isn't just in Montreal, so across the province, you know, students are blocking access to Hydro-Québec buildings, to in Montreal it was the FAQ, which I guess is the equivalent of the LCBO headquarters, and, you know, there's bridges blocked and all sorts of attempted economic disruptions.
Yes, well, blocking the LCBO, yeah, that's going to be noticed, I suppose.
I mean, it's the headquarters, so it's just a building of, you know, provincial significance.
Well, you know, in terms of the provincial government and the government in general, I understand they had taken somewhat of a contemptuous view to the strike earlier, but especially before it happened, because I believe some of the people responsible for that, they were saying that the strikers or the activists only represent about 2% of the student body. There's not going to be a large turnout that day. And then, of course, several hundred thousand people showed up. So, yeah, but you're trying to put pressure on the government now, because I've picked this up from the most recent articles. There's talk or plans by the students involved to concentrate on certain ridings where the Liberals are weak and could lose another election. So I guess you're saying that if the government is not going to be supporting the students, you're going to see if they can be replaced.
Right, so there is that. I mean, the opposition government right now, they did come out and say that they oppose tuition hikes. The student movement is somewhat skeptical of that in some places, because they, you know, we've seen that before, like, you know, promises like that before they got elected and then them going back on it. But yeah, that's definitely one of the ways to put pressure on this government politically, to make them afraid for those, you know, in those ridings where they might lose their seats. Really, the strike itself, that there are about, I think, 190,000 students in Quebec who are still on unlimited strike. And I mean, to understand that, you just have to think about, like, these students have not been going to class for weeks. There has been a disruption in just, you know, all university activities. The classes are not happening. The semester will have to be extended. And that in itself is really strong economic pressure on the government, because the government cannot afford to cancel a semester. I mean, it would just cost a large amount of money to have a double cohort next year. I mean, we saw how that was in Ontario when we had to go through it when they got rid of grade 13. But the universities wouldn't be very happy. And, I mean, you can't just cancel a whole generation of students and, you know, what are you going to do with them if they don't finish the semester? They're going to have to come back next year.
Yes.
And the government does pay for a portion of the tuition fees. They would have to pay for twice as many. And then it also kind of means that a whole generation of students will not graduate for that year. So that creates some issues in terms of workforce that they're expecting to come in. So that is a really big economic pressure on the government that the Quebec students had used in the past. And that is how they had gained some of their wins in the past. In 2005, there was this conflict with the government where they transformed a whole big chunk, like millions and millions of dollars of bursaries into loans. And then after a large general strike of students, the government basically backed off and they transferred those loans back into bursaries. And so Quebec students know that this works, and they have done it before, and they just they know the government is basically bluffing when they say that they won't, that they don't care if, you know, the students are going to be the ones that lose out. Quebec has had several general limited strikes, and a semester has never been canceled in history. So of all these strikes, so it's just a matter of keeping going and knowing that this pressure tactic works, and kind of just waiting the government's bluff out.
Indeed, indeed.
Too, so.
Well, for those who are just tuning in, we're speaking with Soonchi Avlijesh. She is a graduate student at McGill, part of the organizing of the massive strike that occurred recently, tuition strike, part of the larger organizing efforts. I remember the double cohort in Ontario. That's when I graduated, and we were competing with the forward elements of the following year. You know, students are being placed into competition with each other more and more. I remember that was a particularly difficult environment. The universities can only admit certain numbers of people, so people are trying to graduate early with the highest marks. Very competitive environment.
And how do you deal with having a double cohort in every single year in university, right? Because this isn't just first years now. Like, this would be like, double cohort coming into first year, but everybody would be kind of a year behind, right?
Right. Financially, it's very difficult to do, but for the students and for the young people in Quebec and the rest of Canada, tuition has been a big issue. It's come up here again and again. The media and some commentators have been making a big deal about how Quebec students have the lowest tuition in Canada. I guess you
We've definitely heard that argument a lot, especially at McGill, because we have a lot of out-of-province students. Well, I myself am out-of-province. I did my undergraduate in Ontario, of course. And that's a big argument that we keep on hearing. It's like, well, what are you complaining about? You're still going to probably have the lowest tuition in Canada. Well, there's a couple of issues with that. The first one is, well, yeah, we have the lowest tuition in Canada, but it's because Quebec students have fought for it to be that way. The government has continuously, over the years, tried to increase tuition, and every time, you know, the students have come out and say, no, it's not right that you're making education less accessible, that you're putting, you know, this burden on students who are already in huge amounts of debt, and that is why Quebec has the lowest tuition. And other provinces should, you know, take Quebec as an example and strive to have a more accessible education system.
Yes, I agree. People in Quebec have fought for a standard of living, a certain affordable lifestyle. It ties in very closely with the affordable daycare program and similar things. You know, you'd think you'd want everyone to get to that level instead of bring Quebec and others down.
Right.
You know, what's the position of a student in society? You know, a student is a future worker. It's someone who's going to be working in the future, if not already. Most students are already working. So you need people to be able to sustain themselves once they graduate. And if you graduate with unsustainable debt loads, then the society itself is unsustainable. There's tax burden. People won't be able to fulfill that. People won't be able to support social programs. So in order to have social reproduction, the ability for people to continue reproducing their daily lives, reproducing their families, reproducing themselves, they need to be able to get, at the very least, an education without having a mountain of debt.
Right, and I mean, the other thing, it's not very fair to make education only accessible to those who can afford it, and the Quebec system of loans and bursaries assumes a lot of parental contribution. I mean, there are huge issues with the loans and bursaries program, so an example that is pretty sad that keeps on getting brought up is, according to their standards, if a student, both of whose parents work at the dépanneur, so the convenience store, at minimum wage full-time, that student is not qualified for any loans and bursaries because the government assumes that their parents make too much money and that they would be able to finance their whole education, when in reality we know that what the reality of the situation is if, you know, two people are working minimum wage jobs. How much they can afford and whether they can afford the thousands of dollars in tuition plus living expenses that it takes to get to university.
Well, you know, it used to be the case that you'd pile up a debt so that you could get your first car or your first house, your mortgage. Right. And now you've got to do it just to get your education. So you've got to, you know, get a huge student debt, $20,000, $40,000, so that you can enter the workforce and hopefully get a job so that you can take on debt to get a house.
And there's no guarantee that you will get that job, that you will, right?
I mean, it's not really that funny, actually. I mean, there was a cartoon I saw, and it showed an older person saying to a student, "When I was your age, I started out with nothing." And then the student, who has this big debt load on his back, says, "I wish I could start out with nothing."
Because yeah,
you're starting out with negative. If you look at the Globe and Mail comment sections and the CBC on the student tuition strike that you were part of and that campaign, some people will say, you know, well, back in 1973, I went to university and I paid my way through with a summer job.
I actually have some interesting statistics in terms of that that they calculated the number of weeks of full-time work at minimum wage at the time that it took to pay for education in Quebec. So in 1978, working for $3.37 an hour, it took 4 weeks of full-time work and minimum wage to pay for a year of education. In 89, at $5 an hour, it took 2.8 weeks. In 2000, at $7 an hour, it took 6 weeks. In 2012, at $9.65 an hour, which is the present minimum wage, it takes 6.7 weeks. And then if these hikes go through with the projected increase in tuition, and assuming that minimum wage goes up to $12 an hour, it will take 8.8 weeks of full-time work.
Okay, so it went from 3 weeks to 6 weeks, and now it's going to go to 8.8 weeks.
So... and that's just to pay for tuition. So.
Well, I mean, that's pretty straight out. It's becoming more expensive. And
right.
if you talk to some people who are not following that so closely, they'll say things like, well, students need to focus on the basics. You're all out there spending money on your iPhones and going to the pub. You know, you don't need a computer. You don't need a cell phone. Well, get rid of those luxuries. What do you think? Do you need a cell phone as a student or a computer?
Well, I mean, especially as a graduate student, I think it would be, I mean, even the undergraduate, it's pretty impossible to get to a degree without a computer. And most students don't have a landline. They have a cell phone to save money, basically, to
Well, and if you're working a part-time job, you also need that phone because your employer calls you in. It's a necessity, a business expense. But there you go. I mean, this is an issue people have to pay more close attention to. Because,
yeah.
You know, we in Ontario especially, in high school, they were telling us, we're going into a knowledge economy, so you all need to go to university and get your degree. You need to do whatever it takes to get the credits in high school so that you can go to university, so that you can get a knowledge-educated job in a technical or marketable or creative sector. That's what they're telling us. And now, of course, there are very few jobs in such areas, but the cost of attaining a relevant education has multiplied threefold. Very difficult situation.
And the other argument that we keep on getting is, you know, Quebec is in debt. You know, that's just the reality of the situation. The province needs to save money, et cetera, et cetera. And, yeah, Quebec is in debt, but so are individuals. And the Quebec government has made a number of decisions that have cost them a lot of money. Like one of the examples would be, in 2000, they actually reindexed the tax brackets. So we went from having 28 tax brackets to having 3. So somebody right now who earns $77,000 a year pays the same taxes at the same rate as someone earning $10 million a year. And that costs the government $2 billion. And they calculated the cost of education in order to provide free education for everybody in Quebec, it would only cost $700 million. So there's that, like, just one example right there of something they did that cost, like, more than twice what it would have cost to pay for free education for everybody. So... yeah.
You can point to things like the $25 billion war in Afghanistan or the $60 million war in Libya or the thing with the F-35s. I mean, there's all sorts of expenditures. But it's not just a question of where the money's gone. It's also a question of where the money comes from, because the burden of paying the cost, the tuition and taxes in general, have gone to the students. They've gone to citizens.
Right.
There's a $13 billion student debt in Canada, if you pile it all together. And I just saw a graph showing that the corporate tax rate, the amount corporations paid in 1953, was 41%, and it went down to 16% in 2010. So they used
Quebec prides itself on having one of the lowest corporate taxes in North America, and we phased out our capital tax basically to zero in 2007, 2008. So it's, yeah, the corporations are paying less and less.
And if they don't pay, you do. You're the one paying. Well, there you have it. So this is the result of the shifting tax burden. This is the result of taking on debt after debt after debt. But even though we're all facing increased user fees, especially in Ontario, they want us to pay more for the highways and the roads and energy costs and so on. You know, we're all in our individual difficulties, our individual struggles. But in Quebec, people got together on this issue, not just students, but parents, high school students, university students, and unions, because they recognize it is a social crisis. It is what they call a life crisis, that if you can't get started out in life, a whole generation, they can't go through their middle age and be able to support the programs that make Canada great. So it needs change at the social level, involving activists, ordinary citizens from all over, congregating and doing whatever it takes to put pressure on the government.
That's right. And this doesn't have to be limited to Quebec. And I mean, one of the examples of that I really see is at McGill, where when I came here, there was very little happening. You know, I wouldn't, 3 years ago, I would have never thought that there would be an unlimited strike at McGill. That has never happened before in the history. And it hasn't been easy. I mean, the administration has been extremely unfriendly. Just this week, students were banned from campus for a number of days just by administration. They've chosen to, like, remove them because they were leafleting with, they were doing strike-related actions. And so there is a lot of resistance. I mean, students have received disciplinary action letters for the activism they have been doing at this university. And there has been a lot of resistance and a lot of strife even. But, you know, when people are determined and they see that there is a way to do it, and if we all stick together, it's okay, and that it will be worth it. It will be worth not paying an extra $1,625 a year for university.
And again, it's the case of the daycare, having affordable $7 a day daycare in Quebec. If they can have it in Quebec, we can have it here. Just as if they have affordable, good quality education in Finland or Sweden, or even if they have good enough education that's affordable in Mexico and elsewhere, surely we can have what we want here in Canada.
Yeah, it's a matter of political will, not budget.
Absolutely. Well, great. I mean, you've been putting attention to this case very well. The amount of demonstrators is unprecedented, and I think it shows the way. So we're going to be keeping an eye on that. I know there's yourself and people from the union that are giving commentary to radio programs, so we'll be able to copy or give updates on that as well in the future. So we'll be looking forward to hearing from you and members of the union in the future, near future, for updates on this. So thanks so much for giving your time. I know there's all these things happening, but we appreciate that. And we hope to see things like this here in Ontario. So thanks for the work you've done on this.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was great to talk to you again.
And again, that was Soonshi Avlijess, and she is a graduate student at McGill, also taking part in organizing the large actions that we just witnessed in Quebec. There's more to come on that, and the Taylor Report will likely be interviewing another member of that union in the upcoming weeks to get further updates on the strategy and how it's progressing.